Welcome, everyone, to Voice of the Valley here in the Horn Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Studios. I'm your host, Dave Bell, 428-9494, 928-428-9494. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're having a good day. My wife has a phrase that I love. I really do love this phrase. If you're not seated at the table, you are on the menu.
That's a good one.
And it's 100% true. So last night I was at EAC for the SBDC's Dream Builder graduation.
Okay.
Of which my wife is a graduate. That's how she started her business. Mm-hmm. She started it first, then went to Dream Builder and went through the program. And it is a tremendous benefit to anybody doing a business.
Cool.
Even if it's just a hobby and you think you might want to, go to this. It's 10 weeks. They give you all the information that you need to start a business.
Nice.
People have walked out and said, I'm not going to do it.
Oh, sure. Sure.
But they save themselves aggravation and money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a fantastic program. So I go to this, but it's not just the people. And by the way, made some connections about people that we might do business with.
Good.
But it was the networking and speaking with a couple of people, including one from the Phoenix area. She's with the Thunderbird School of Management.
Nice.
And about maybe a program that could start here that would benefit the entire Gila Valley. Mm-hmm. And then a representative from Freeport was there and going, maybe we could do this across all our properties and help the communities where we're at everywhere. Mm-hmm. And
that would be great.
It really would. I'll fill you in later because nothing's firm
nice.
Yet.
Yeah, sure.
But that to me is the pure value of these types of things. Mm-hmm. And it only happens because you're at the table.
That's right.
Yeah. You know? So it was a great night. A lot of graduates. I think it was the biggest graduating class for Graham.
Oh,
ever.
Nice.
So a lot of people, a lot of folks that I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with their businesses.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I also heard one say, yeah, I don't really traditionally advertise. Dude. It was the spouse of one who was graduating.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your business.
As a person whose business was an advertising and marketing company, I'm like, okay, but.
The average business owner, I think, doesn't realize that marketing is no different than your electric bill.
That's right. That's right.
If you're not paying for marketing, you are dooming your business to failure.
Right, right.
It's just the nature of, of a consumer economy.
Yep.
And I felt bad, especially because he's in the trades. And I was speaking to his wife, and I said, well, he's got to be just crazy busy. I understand why he's not. Because every tradesman I talk to is like, I am 3 to 4 weeks out before a new client.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, not really. And I'm like, well, maybe because you're not marketing? Because every other tradesman around here can't.
Yeah.
Can't take on new work.
Yes, I am aware.
So, but you know, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make them drink. So, but it was a great evening. SBDC does a great job with that program. I recommend it to everybody if it's just a hobby.
Yeah.
And you think, well, maybe I can make a couple of bucks at it. You know, I'm canning fruits.
Right.
And everybody loves my canned peaches. Well, maybe you could sell them.
Yeah.
But you got to go through the processes. Yep. And this will help you.
Cool.
So that voice you hear, Sarah Sales, she is with the GWP Gila Watershed Partnership, had a fantastic public outreach meeting 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago.
About 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, to which all the comments on the posting that we made for the story was, gee, I wish I had known about it. I would have been there because there were literally five of us there.
Right. Right.
And that's not an exaggeration.
It's not.
And two of us were media.
Yep. For which I'm very thankful.
Yeah. So Tom was there from the Courier. I was there. And one of whom is a board member.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Phil is on the board.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Is he or did he?
He left the board, but he's an emeritus member.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
Yes, he doesn't vote anymore, but he still shows up for stuff.
But he had been an architect from the beginning. So, Before we get into the meat of what you talked about, because I really want to, I want to talk about marketing.
Yep.
You made a point of spreading that across social media. We are having this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is welcome. Please
mm-hmm.
come.
Mm-hmm.
I know we did a story. Mm-hmm. I know the Courier mm-hmm. did. Mm-hmm. Had it in. We can't literally go to every house and say, by the way, here's a meeting.
Yeah. I don't know what else to do. Like we feel like we're working public relations better and better. Like when I first got here, Dave, I didn't have time.
Right.
But every new event or type of event that we're having, I feel like we're doing more. We're on more social media platforms. We're creating more like press releases now. I'm finally at the point that I can take 5 minutes and sit down and write a press release and things that I have, you know, that background and experience in. And we're getting it out in as timely a manner as we can, because you can't do it too early or people forget about it. You can't do it too late or it doesn't get into the paper. But how else do people want us to tell them about it is my question. I just don't know the answer to that.
You're here once a month.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Not every organization gets that.
Right.
You take advantage of it. I mean, every organization can.
Sure.
They just don't take advantage.
Right.
But you in the library.
Yeah.
Clockwork.
Yeah.
So I felt bad for these folks, but mm-hmm. by the same token, boy, there was a lot of outreach.
There was.
Really was. And I think it's a social media problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think social media has conditioned people to assume if I don't see it on my feed,
right,
whatever your social media preference is,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But as I'm learning, if take GWP, for example, if you post something, at best, 3% of the people that have liked your page will see it on
mm-hmm.
Facebook,
mm-hmm.
which means there's a mathematical equation for how to reach everybody, but it would mean you posting the same thing about 500 times.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no way to do that. I mean, partly because people who do see it will be like, stop posting that.
Yeah.
And, you know, our staff is the size that it is. And there's just, it's not possible. But like Hyla takes stuff that's posted on the main page and posts it to her groups. And Steve posts it to his groups. And then we sent it to the college. And Chris McBride posted it on all of his socials. I feel like we did a great job getting the word out.
I thought so too.
And yeah, then we had 6 people, including me. 5 who came and then me made 6.
So I'm blaming people a little bit for this because we've been conditioned.
Yeah.
That Zuckerberg, I almost said a bad word. he's brilliant, but it's conditioned people to assume as I'm scrolling, if I don't see it, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
When we used to make the effort, we turned on the radio in the car.
Right.
We picked up the newspaper in the morning.
Yep.
And if you don't make that effort, because once it's in the paper, it's there forever.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a reason newspapers are the historical artifact for a community. They're vital. And you have to make the effort. You have to plunk down a buck or whatever it costs now and pick it up.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell people.
I don't either.
I just felt I felt bad for these folks because they wanted to be a part of it. But it's kind of on you. You have to make the effort. Mm-hmm. So, social media screwed us all up.
It really has. I agree with that. I mean, I'm doing my best to work it. You know, it's like I said, it's my background. I'm trying to learn and keep up with things. But we also don't have the funding like most small businesses and small nonprofits to have like a dedicated social media person. So. Right.
I've got literally on my desktop in my office when I leave here, sitting up right now is Facebook and Twitter, two tabs.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep them open now at this point.
Yep.
And just every 20 minutes I scroll and do a search
because
you have to.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's do a quick, for those that missed it, kind of recap. The public outreach meeting was about the Tamarisk leaf beetle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what did you fill the 5 of us in on?
So I kind of talked about some, it was a presentation I gave at the River's Edge West Conference in March, and basically lessons that we've learned as we have been preparing for the beetle to get here. The biggest of those lessons is that big funding from Walton that came, you know, 10 years ago was a little too early in the process and would have been more valuable now than it was 10 years ago when we were trying to get ready for the beetle to get here. So that's number one. But over the years, the staff has learned some great restoration practices. A lot of them have their roots in kind of Native American practices that make it easier for a small group of people to keep track of, like, a large number of plants that they're trying to keep alive. And we've just learned a lot about the beetle over time, what it's going to do when it gets here, which is probably not much, and that the two different species, when they meet, are likely to hybridize and become sterile. That's what they think they're seeing on the Rio Grande.
My big takeaway from the meeting was that you're not just fighting a ecological battle,
right,
with the tamarisk, salt cedar.
Mm-hmm.
You're fighting a political battle.
Yep.
With between the state and the feds.
Yes.
Could you explain that?
Yeah, you bet. So the state of Arizona, particularly through the Department of Fire and Forestry Management, is very pro getting rid of the salt cedars, like most of us are. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife, is that who oversees ESA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife? And it's not everyone, so this is a not all U.S. Fish and Wildlife. But the people in Arizona who represent that agency are more concerned with the endangered species and are not as willing to work with us on tamarisk removal. So it requires a ton of permitting. It requires a lot of kind of behind the scenes talks and sometimes arguments and fights to get to the point where we can, you know, even in these small pockets, take the tamarisk out.
So if I understood it, your presentation, it's not that they love the tamarisk.
No.
It's that some endangered species,
yes,
have,
I didn't
adapted
say that right, mm-hmm,
to using the tamarisk,
right,
as habitat.
Right. And the problem that I have with the way that they approach it is that they have adapted to it because it's in their habitat range. They will unadapt from it if it's gone and there's something else in its place, because they don't only nest in tamarisk now. It just happens to be there. So that's kind of where that argument and tension is they've turned that into critical habitat when in fact it's just
habitat of convenience.
Convenience, yeah, exactly.
Right, and actually what happens is it becomes a death trap for them,
mm-hmm,
because tamarisk is so flammable that you have these large crown fires in a riparian environment that should not ever happen. And so it can go through and decimate thousands of nests.
Yeah, because the live tamarisk, as we've talked about before, burns hotter than the dead tamarisk. So it's more dangerous when it's living.
Oh, that other voice, Hyla Klein. I should have said that at the beginning. I apologize. So Hyla's here too. And it's funny because what strikes me is funny because I'm looking at it from outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're looking to put in native species in place of the tamarisk, which the endangered species have always used,
mm-hmm,
as their nesting locations, their habitat. So you're actually trying to protect,
yes,
native species,
yes,
whether it's flora or fauna.
Mm-hmm.
Including them.
Yeah.
Right.
And yet, those trying to protect an endangered species, you both have the same mission.
Right,
but,
right.
But
we're going about it a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got to be a case of, let's just get everybody to the table, but I don't know if...
The thing is, over the years, everybody has been at the table, and that small group that still is hanging on to that mentality of restoration is bad, is not going to change their minds, unfortunately. They're just going to make it harder for those of us who are trying to help the endangered species and the river and the whole ecology to do our jobs.
And that's crazy because restoration is protecting what they want to protect. Mm-hmm.
But they don't see it that way, and we can't make them.
Yeah. So that was my big takeaway. But I'm always looking at the political side. I'm not looking at the ecological side because you're the experts, not me. Yeah. It's all dirt to me. I don't know.
Oh, it's soil.
Yes. The correct term is soil.
Sorry, that's an inside joke.
That's all right. You know, I thought you were going to correct me and say it's sand, but but the other thing that I was really excited to hear about was when there is tamarisk removal, whether it's the beetle, whether it's a fire, whether it's manual removal, you guys are doing these islands. Mm-hmm. So could you explain what those are?
Sure. Our goal from the time we received the Walton money was to create these islands of habitat so that when the beetle got here, the plan was that, you know, hopefully the beetle would get rid of the tamarisk, which isn't exactly what's going to happen. But when they do take out that cover that protects the birds from the sun and all of that, they'd have somewhere else to go. So that has been the goal all along. We've been, I would say, semi-successful, and only semi-successful in part because, you know, like I said in the meeting, we don't have any control over Mother Nature. We don't always have control over things like the economy that impact how many people we have on our staff and that type of thing. So we're still working at it and still believe pretty strongly that it is a way to protect endangered species.
And you said it a couple times on here, the beetle will not take out all the tamarisk.
I don't think any of us believe that anymore. I think that was how it was sold to us, but I think that the monitoring in other states is really showing that it can work with us as a way to take that foliage cover down so that we could then come in and like spray or whatever it is, cut with chainsaws or whatever. And we find that The second coming of the tamarisk every year when it reflowers, places where the beetle are, they're not flowering as much. So it is helping. But I don't think people should expect the whole river to turn brown because of the beetle.
I think I asked this at the meeting. Because Arizona has such a water crisis and salt cedar is a sponge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just takes all the water in to the point of excluding every other plant around it. Has there been any talk about dealing with the state, maybe getting them to lean on the feds, to try and convince the feds from a water standpoint rather than from an endangered species standpoint?
I don't know if there has been talk about that, but it's funny because water generally is a states' rights issue, and so it's often handled separately from things like endangered species, which to me does not make sense because we're all using the same water, but I don't know. I just don't have an answer for that.
I know Phil and I kind of disagreed on who has control over the river.
Right.
It's always been my understanding that there are certain federal waterways within the United States where the Bureau of Reclamation has control. Colorado River, Mississippi.
Rio Grande
is one. These are rivers where the feds only. State doesn't have any control over that. My understanding is the Gila is a state, and we have to deal with New Mexico because it flows between the two.
I think you're right. I think that the part of the Gila that's in New Mexico is controlled by New Mexico, and the part of the Gila that is in Arizona is controlled by Arizona.
So I just wondered if that might be a way to get in the door.
It might.
To start conversation and say, look, you know.
Yep. But like I say, the state agencies support us.
Right.
They want us doing the work we're doing.
But if they're, I I've had discussions with people where you're both on the same page, but coming at it from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you're both talking endangered species, well, each has a stake in the ground,
yeah,
and they're going to defend that. But if you say, well, wait, let's talk water. Oh, well, maybe there's a way to cross-pollinate there,
right,
if I can use a GWP word, at least as a way to open the conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to talk. I have, you know, no way to get in on this fight.
Yeah.
So I just find it funny because we know it's an invasive species, mm-hmm, salt cedar, mm-hmm, is. We know it damages the environment.
Right.
We know it's a huge fire risk.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
yeah,
there's an agency that won't at least discuss what to do.
Right, right. Yeah.
Because we agree, protect the, mm-hmm, willow flycatcher, mm-hmm, and the other species. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're important to this ecology.
Yeah.
I think part of their argument is that they are concerned that our efforts aren't going to be worth it in the end because it's so hard to get rid of tamarisk. And so they're now asking the question, can we actually do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a lot of where the fight comes from, but we still believe in that. That we can.
Yeah.
So is there, all right, then let me ask this. Is there a detriment to a partial success? I guess would be my question because, all right, let's assume you can't. Let's assume Fish and Wildlife in Arizona, mm-hmm, is correct. This is Sisyphean. There's no way, mm-hmm, to get the boulder over the hill. But is there a problem with, even if it's just in pockets, taking those down and creating fire breaks?
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah, and that is a piece of our puzzle. And then, of course, Graham County has started putting in fire breaks that we will be taking over the maintenance of in the next few months. And maybe from there we can push in both directions. Maybe there will be some fire that will help take some of that tamarisk out. Unfortunately, at the, you know, loss of endangered species. But I think we are still doing this work because we do believe that there's value in partial success, because even the fire breaks are going to help with the water table. So
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the other phrase? Don't let good be the don't let perfect be the enemy of success or good.
Good, I think. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Take what you can get, I guess is what it comes down to. 428-9494 is the phone number. Gonna take a quick break, give everybody a chance to catch their breath. More with Sarah Sales and Hyla Klein from GWP right after this. Welcome back to Voice of the Valley in the Horn Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Studios. I'm Dave Bell. Sarah Sales and Hyla Klein are here there with the Gila Watershed Partnership. Now, we are talking about native plants out along the Gila River.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want.
Yep.
Man does enough damage on our own. We don't need to help. Let's have native plants there so things run the way they're supposed to. Mm. You guys are helping that even in the urbanized areas. And yes, Safford's an urbanized area, even though we're in a tiny little town. The native plant sale is going on right now, right?
It is. We kicked off on Monday with our virtual sale. And the first, well, we're only going to have one like event. It's going to be Friday. This Friday, 2 days from today, for anybody out there who's listening. Yeah.
Please listen.
From noon to six.
So what is the one in-person event? What can people expect?
Well, we'll have some food. We'll have a ton of people there to answer questions, maybe games for the kids. We aren't sure because we were going to do that, and then the person who was helping with that couldn't
come.
We're
still doing it.
Oh, we are? Okay, games for the kids. And at 5:30, the brass quintet from EAC is going to come play for everybody. So we'll probably have music. We're going to make it a party as much as we can, but nothing super fancy, just kind of a fun afternoon helping people learn about plants.
I remember when you sent the press release, we talked earlier about press releases, there is a featured plant. What is the featured plant for this sale?
That is the Arizona rosewood, Valquilinia californica. That's the scientific name for it. It's a really neat plant because it's got kind of pretty wood in it. It's kind of a bushy plant. It can get up to 15, 20 feet, but it's actually more bush until that point. And it's got these long, beautiful leaves that are evergreen and kind of pointed on the ends, or heavily serrated at least. So it looks a little bit like holly. But then it's got these beautiful white clusters of flowers that smell wonderful.
So if I were landscaping and I don't necessarily want to fence, would this function as a good barrier?
It could, yes.
Plant? You know, because I remember back in Illinois, we planted, I don't know, half a dozen bushes for our neighbors because they didn't like our dog. So we're like, okay, we'll just put this up and create a barrier so our dog didn't, the dog could still smell the neighbors, but didn't see the neighbors and get excited, you know.
Right, and you can prune it, so.
And I had wondered if it could replace, like, oleanders, because people put, you know, oleanders, and they're not native, and they're toxic to dogs.
They're toxic to everyone.
Everybody.
Oleanders are very dangerous.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are a great substitute for oleander. And they're native and they require less water and they are not poisonous as far as I understand.
So, all right. So a chance to pick one of these or more of these up. Is there a limit on what anyone can buy in terms of volume? Because you guys also produce plants on contract for other restoration efforts,
those
correct?
Are separate, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, the plants for the plant sale, let's sell them all, man. Come on.
So if we've got a housing developer, this is a perfect opportunity to come in and maybe
use some native plants instead of, yes.
Oh,
yes.
So there you go. And we were talking about being at the table or on the menu. Mm-hmm. We were discussing the Safford Spotlight on Small Business, which took place on Monday. And we were discussing, okay, what's the next one going to be? Because everybody walked out excited.
Yeah.
And talk is maybe housing might be the next thing to talk about.
Nice.
Which is a huge need here. Mm-hmm. But with housing comes landscaping.
Yeah. Yep.
And the last thing we want to do is use up potable water on our landscaping.
Right. Yep.
So for anybody who's interested in native plants, as they should be, what do they do? They go online to purchase, other than this event Friday?
You can purchase online on our website, gwpaz.org. And then we have Fridays open so that you can actually come in and pick them up then. And we're actually going to be open every Friday for people to come in and shop through April this year. So that's a little bit different as well. Like we said, the actual event is starting this Friday, but we will be open to the public the rest of the month on Fridays from 9 to 3.
But yeah. I can go on right now.
You can go on right now and order stuff and then come any Friday and pick up.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a little closer to what it used to be pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So
I do want to make one thing kind of clear. The event, which is this week, is noon to 6. We won't be doing pickups before noon. But every other Friday in April, it'll be 9 to 3. So just so people don't, like, show up at 9 o'clock on Friday if they place an order and we're, like, running around like chickens with our heads cut off because we're getting ready to start.
All right. Let me throw another curve at you that you guys may or may not have thought about. If I'm a housing developer, and I'm working on, because I know Pima's got a couple of developments in process through the planning process right now. If I came to you and said, hey, I'd really like to outfit the whole development, you know, 10 homes, 15 homes with native plants. Is that something GWP can do?
Yes.
With developers? Mm-hmm. So what do they need to do to get that ball rolling?
They would just need to come to us and let us know what species they are interested in, or we could give them suggestions. If they wanted to develop, though, I would suggest that they come to us not at the last minute,
right?
With, you know, do you have this tree? Do you have that tree? I want it in 2 months. That doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. Usually trees take at least a year, maybe 2 to 3, to get up to size to be able to be successfully planted in the ground. And then, you know, grasses we can do in maybe a couple of months. Mm-hmm. But see, different plants require different amounts of time to be ready. And so you would have to have your plan ready, you know, at least a year in advance for what you wanted us to do for you.
So I'm also thinking Town of Pima, City mm-hmm. of Safford, both of whom are developing some new park space. Mm-hmm. Should be in communication right now if the goal is native plants.
Right.
Right.
So maybe something for a person at the City of Safford who might be listening right yeah. now
well,
to make an inquiry.
Yeah. And I met in March with Graham County about some other things, but talked to them about that. And I'm meeting with Thatcher and hopefully Safford this month. So that is something we'll talk about as well.
There we go. Sarah Sales, Hyla Climb with GWP. The event is this Friday from noon to six. But you can go online right now and order those native plants.
Yes, you can.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you all for listening as well. I appreciate it every single day. I'm out of here for right now, but I'll be back tomorrow. Till then, have a great day.